somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to what will soon be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery, Real Stories of Transformation, whether you have suffered from drugs or alcohol or any other type of addiction, or maybe overcome a setback that seemed impossible to overcome. This is the place where you can rest and find comfort and encouragement.
You can really rest in our program.
Yeah, you can.
A lot
can.
Of people fall asleep, Bill.
Really? I don't believe that, George. Bill Arnold on this side of the microphone. On the other side, George Fraser, who I believe in a hostage situation, you are likely to be released first.
Thank you. Thank you.
That would be my guess. They would just go, get him out of here. We've had enough.
It's kind of like my family.
Well, I didn't.
We should do a show on that some night. Family of origin.
Yeah. And we've got a guest tonight. Kelly, he's calling in tonight from Baltimore. And I believe he did not call collect, so I know that I'm happy.
I'm looking forward to that. He sounds like a good guy. We just spoke to him a couple minutes before the show. It's going to be a great program.
And, Georgia, I want to start with a couple words of Scripture. I want to start with Proverbs, I think it's 12:25. An anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up. And maybe there's listeners tonight that just needs a few kind words. So, George, give them a few kind words.
Well, I got a friend named Bill who needs a few kind words after the hockey game today.
Well, let's not go there. But we want to encourage you. We want you to know that if you are struggling in the middle of an addiction or at the beginning of one, or you're at a point where you're at the bottom, fear not, because God is with you. Do not be dismayed. He will strengthen you and help you, and he will uphold you with his righteous right hand.
Isaiah.
That is Isaiah 41:10. Georgia
like
boy.
That.
Yes, yes. George, I want to talk a little bit tonight about step 10, and then I want to talk a little bit about a high-functioning alcoholic.
Thank you. I'd like to think I am.
Well, I want to get your opinion on that. As
okay.
A licensed chemical dependency counselor, you have credentials and you can share your expertise, because I think high-functioning alcoholic is an interesting description, and there's a lot of people out there that do that, and they live in probably an extra amount of denial.
Well said. I want to go back a little earlier to what you said about somebody who's out there that's hopeless and hurting. Here's the good news. If you are there, you are so close to a life-transforming, life-changing event, and that's meeting Jesus Christ. I think for a lot of us, when we think it is all over, it is, but the new day is just right around the corner, and you can make a change in your life anytime you decide to. You need to meet Jesus, and that'll happen. Tonight we're going to talk about step 10, Bill, and that's continue to take our personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. We talk on this program that all Christians are in recovery. You don't have to be a recovering drug addict or alcoholic. If you are a Christian, you are in recovery because your life should have changed after you met Jesus Christ. It's really impossible for it not to. And we want to keep growing, Bill, towards holiness. So maybe we're not drinking anymore, but maybe we're working too much. Maybe we're gambling. Maybe we have some pornography addiction. Maybe we had a food addiction. I think in the circles that I walk around with Christians, obesity, Bill, is probably kind of an acceptable sin. And all we're doing in any of these things is trying to fill ourselves with a God substitute. So it's a great step to talk about. How are you doing on your anger? I went to church today, and I was late to the church that I wanted to go to, and I went to another one, and a lady was talking about a guest speaker, and she was talking about the power of the gospel. If it's really true, are we loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourselves? And you know, Bill, I had to go, no, I'm not doing that. Well, why am I not doing that?
It's too hard.
It is hard, but a lack of faith. I've got this. I'm good enough. Do you ever get to the point where you think you've arrived and you're good enough? I think the enemy does that. You're talking about a high-functioning alcoholic. As our friend Tim Keller would say, that's a lot like a mafia hitman who takes his mother to church on Sunday and thinks he's doing the right thing. If I have a job, Bill, if I'm providing for my family, if I'm a vice president of a big company, I might drink a little bit, but I got this covered. Where's Jesus in all that? And that high-functioning alcoholic is we're trying to compensate through other areas and make it okay to do what we do. I'm entitled to do this. Well, when we give our life to Jesus, we're entitled to do what he wants us to do. And that's a tall order.
All right, George, here's a little bit of a brief questionnaire. This was developed by Dr. John Ewing. I don't know who this individual is. Do you know him?
No, but I'm outmanned already.
Totally, because what, you got a master's degree?
Yeah.
And he's got like a PhD?
And I did it online, you know.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah.
So anyway, here's a way to remember these questions is the word cage. And the first letter is C is, have you ever felt you should cut down on your drinking?
Yep.
Okay.
The old cage test. Yep.
You know this one, huh?
I do.
Okay. And have people annoyed you by criticizing your drinking?
Some people annoy me without criticizing my drinking.
Okay.
Yep.
Present company excluded?
Excluded.
Thank you. Have you ever felt bad or guilty about your drinking?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever had
eye-opener?
That's the last one. Have you ever had a drink first thing in the morning to steady your nerves or to get rid of a hangover?
No, that's a lie, a lie, a lie.
Okay,
sure,
but anyway, that was the questionnaire that would suggest maybe there's a problem.
There's another test, too, and what those do is screen whether you have a problem or not. And like any good practicing alcoholic, you're going to minimize or just downright lie on those things. But what they do is show you that if you have those, you probably have a problem, and it's a good screener.
Mm-hmm. So some of the symptoms of high-functioning alcoholics is you love to be in the company of other people who drink. You kind of are the life of the party. You're generally obsessing over alcohol. The thought of alcohol is never really far away from your mind. It's just a part of your life. You experience shame over drunken behavior. You find yourself doing things you're not super proud of and you're ashamed of. And I think a friend of mine's wife said that whatever problem I have, consuming alcohol will only make it worse.
Yes. I like that. We're trying to rationalize our behavior at a certain point. And what a screening test like CAGE or MASS does is really bring it to the forefront. We do that on our Christian walk, Bill, by looking at the Ten Commandments. How many of those are we breaking? Are you loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself? And the answer, of course, is no. So what corrective action can we take? Well, we realize that probably no human power could help our alcoholism. We can't stop it. But God could and would if he were found. Mm-hmm. And that's what this program is all about. These bad events that happen, the DWIs, the loss of jobs, they're God speaking to us and saying, hey, it's not working. I'm here. I love you. I heard today in church, the lady who gave the sermon said that when we're most broken, we run away from God rather than run to him. And I think that is so right on, Bill.
Mm-hmm. So, George, we're just running up against our break here pretty soon. And let's dabble into step 10 again. Do you have some things to share about step 10? Or did you already do that? Because I don't really listen to you when you talk.
Did you say something?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So we got more Step 10 stuff?
Do you want it now?
Yeah, I want it now.
Okay.
Alex is laughing. He's going, come on, guys, settle your little feud, right?
Yeah, get it together.
Thank
come
you
on.
So much. You see? He's on my side. He's on my side.
It's an adult show tonight,
yes,
isn't
it?
Nobody showed up.
We have a limited adult supervision tonight in the studio. Go
One of the things you do really well, Bill, is you do quiet time every morning, and I know you well enough that you look at what your day is ahead, and I also know that you look at what you did yesterday and how could you improve. You're always talking to me about a quest for holiness and becoming more Christ-like. And step 10 is not just negative. There's some things that we are doing right. If you have quit drinking, if you've quit drugging, if you're working on your marriage and you're trying to be more Christ-like, great. You got that as a gift from God because a dead man doesn't know he's dead. A sinful man rationalizes. And if you're trying to improve, you got that from God. So chalk that one up as a win. So what we always want to do is how can I do my walk better today? What could I do for somebody? What, you know, what loving act can I do for somebody in my day ahead? Step 10, I like to do it in the morning and I like to do it at night. Are there some things that I could have done better during the day? Absolutely. But the awareness that we could do it and change with Jesus' help is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's an active step.
Yep. And just for our listeners, repeat what step 10 is again.
Continue to take a personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. The other thing is when I am wrong and my actions are wrong, I think the sign of spiritual maturity in my recovery, if there is any, is when I step off the beam, it's for a shorter period of time than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And the reason is I have some resources and people to go to and a program to work where I can go, hey, I was wrong. I'm gonna admit that. Forgive me. We look at 1 John. If we are faithful to confess our sins, he is faithful to forgive us, and we can get back into the sunlight of the Spirit of Christ.
I love it. George, Philippians 1:29 says, "For it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for him."
Wow.
That is something we don't talk about quite enough, do we?
Well, we go, if I walk with Jesus, what do I get out of this, dude?
Right, right. So we're called to suffer for him. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back from break. We've got a spectacular guest online.
Looking forward to it.
Calling in from Baltimore. Our team beat his team today. We're not going to bring that up, except 8 times.
They beat him yesterday, too, I think. Bill.
Yeah, 2 out of 3. You are listening to Real Recovery with Bill Arnold and George Fraser. Thanks for being with us tonight. It's 5:15 on a beautiful Sunday day. Be back in a minute. Everybody, welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. We're delighted that you're on board, either whether it's on purpose or by accident. We'll take it either way, won't we, George?
Yep.
George, you're probably at the age and stage of your life where you can have a party at your house and your neighbors don't even realize it.
They don't even realize it's there.
Anyway, I love it. Can I quote Mike Tyson of all people before we bring on our guest? I love this quote, and I think I've maybe brought it up once or twice before.
You've said it to me.
I just love it because it's a good reminder. And the line is, everyone has a plan till they get punched in the mouth. And I think that there's a lot of stress in life, a lot of things that come into life that become that punch in the mouth. And then we start thinking, like you said earlier, do we run towards God or do we run away from him?
You bet.
And our guest tonight, Kelly, is a friend, and he lives in Baltimore. And discussions with him kind of indicated that, you know, he had the high-functioning alcoholic thing going for about 2 decades. And he's going to tell a story tonight. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, we're delighted you're with us. So, George...
I'm just glad he's still there.
We won yesterday, okay, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Oh, boo-hoo. All right, but I think we took
the
series.
So you got that going for you.
Yeah. So anyway. So, Kelly, God's really been, it's really transformed, done some transformational work in your life, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has, actually. born and raised in church. Actually, I'm 51 now, and born and raised in church, and I didn't quite know a functioning alcoholic, but he hit me upside the head with a 2 before.
Yeah.
When
did you first start, you know, dabbling? Was there some peer pressure in high school even? I mean, when did you start having, you know, recreational beverages that you thought were going to be okay for you?
Actually, believe it or not, at 16.
Okay.
You know, we dabbled in the vodka, and that honestly, I'm not going to say that started it, mm-hmm. but it became a very big part of my life from 18 till I quit drinking about 6 years ago, and I'm 51 now.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out that Satan is very patient.
Oh, is he ever?
I say that in a loving way, but sin is it takes time, and he will destroy you over time. He doesn't do it overnight. It just builds up, and he lets you bury yourself. I found that out the hard way after 20 years of marriage. My wife decided she had had enough. She loved me, but she couldn't be married to me anymore. And that's when I cried out to Jesus. I said, Jesus, you bring my wife back to me, and I'll serve you, and I will serve you wholeheartedly. And he fulfilled that promise to me, and it's been 6 years. I've been alcohol free, and the Lord has been faithful. And it's just to me, it's overwhelming that my God loved me so much that he basically took me back. because I did just about everything against him. I spit on him. I didn't want to be around it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be around the church people. I considered it going to my planet. That's what I always called it. My drinking always just put me on my planet, and I love being there. I love being numb. I didn't have to face the world's problems. You know, I was a high-functioning alcoholic. Never drank on the job. Couldn't wait to get off to go sit in the bar for a couple of hours before the wife got off.
Mm-hmm.
Then I came home and sat in the garage with doctors, lawyers. I'm in a nice neighborhood. And I thought everything was going well. You know, I was the life of the party. I didn't really want to recognize I had a problem. I'd force myself not to drink every night. But that night I didn't drink, I would go through about a half gallon of ice cream and never really realize why I needed that ice cream. Might sound stupid, but I needed the sugar. Hmm. Didn't want to recognize that I had a problem. But I can honestly say that I'm much better off now. I'm not going to say everything's hunky-dory. Satan still attacks me. I miss some of the old friends, but I don't go back to them. I don't want to be around it. I've found new people in the church. That's one thing that I have done, because it did leave a big void in my life. When you're an alcoholic, you're the life of the party. And what George said earlier, you find people of like mind, and you tend to hang around them. I called it my web. I had a very big web around me. You know, if one buddy didn't want to drink, I'd find someone else. There was always someone in my circle that would drink with me. And I'd always get up for work the next morning, wouldn't have a hangover. But I was a very good functional alcoholic. And I regret it. I have two kids right now, 23 and 20, that I wasn't part of their life because of alcohol. I didn't see it. I didn't want to see it. But I regret it to this day. And the Lord's put all that in the past. You know, I still have scars. I'll always have scars. I almost lost a beautiful wife. And the Lord restored my marriage. Is it perfect? Not by any means. But I work on it. I've learned to talk to her. I've learned to spend some time with her. I actually get to know her after being with her for 33 years. You know, alcohol numbs you. And the sad part is she started to drink probably after 20 years. She started drinking because she wanted to be part of the problem, the circle. That was a big mistake. I should have seen it. You know, alcoholics tend to bring other people down with them. And I started to bring my wife down. She seen it. She recognized it. She wanted to get away from it. So, but like I say, I can tell you the Lord has been very faithful. He put new friends in my life. I've really gotten involved with my church. Became part of the men's group. I'm actually a deacon in the church now. And that void's not there anymore. The Lord has filled it. And I always had a servant's heart. And I guess that's part of being a deacon now. I love serving other people. I love being around people. I love sharing what the Lord has done with me. And that's where I'm at. It's been a long road, but I'm enjoying life now without a beer in my hand or a mixed drink in my hand. You know, I can actually play a round of golf now without having to stuff 12 or 13 beers in my golf bag. You know,
I knew I liked you as a golfer, you know?
Yeah, well, I know. I guarantee you there's a lot of people listening that did the same thing I did. You know, you stuff some beers in your bag. You go fishing. Hey, I don't care if it's 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. I want to have a beer in my hand. You know, I did not know how to have fun without it. I had to have it. It was the catalyst.
Kelly, there is so much good information here. I want to stop you for a minute because I want to take you back. Billy, there's just loads of good segues here.
Oh, he backed the truck up, didn't he?
He really did.
Yep.
And with your permission, Kelly, I'd like to go back and ask you, okay, so things are unraveling at home at this time, and you got to quit drinking or your wife's gone, and she might be gone anyway. Was it hard for you to quit drinking, and how did you quit drinking?
Honestly, it was, and she don't mind me sharing this, Satan really worked in our lives. Depression hit her. She had left me. She'd been living with her sister. I come home, and it might sound a little graphic. I found her in the bathtub, and she had cut herself probably 38 times.
Mm.
Satan was destroying our marriage, and I honestly, I take a lot, most of the blame for it. I allowed it. I turned my back on God. That's when, George, I made that commitment to the Lord. And I shared this with Bill. I know you're not supposed to make vows with the God because you tend to break them. But I cried out to him, and I said, Lord, you bring my wife back to me. I won't touch alcohol again. And I've stood true to that. And my Lord has been faithful. And he restored our marriage. Our divorce papers were signed. We were done. And honestly, thank God for my background growing up in church. Because at that point, I had two paths I could take. I could either drown myself in a bottle, which I was already doing, or I could cry out to a God that loved me. And I took the other choice. Because I was scared to death right then and there. I was scared because I knew what I was capable of doing. And alcohol is a very good numbing agent. And that's the choice I made. I laid it down.
So did you start attending church again on a regular basis?
I did. When my wife left me, I started attending church. She honestly thought it was just because I was trying to get her back. But in our family, I have a couple pastor relatives that I cried out to them, and they gave me some wisdom, and they basically kept telling me, tell her you love her, and don't stop. Even though you want to lash out her, just keep telling her that you love her. And I did not know the power in that. And sooner or later, it was probably 6 months later, she said, hey, this man has changed. And we worked it out. We went to some counseling, and we got our lives back on track.
You know, you bring up a couple of great points there. We always want to go to God and to Jesus right away to because he performs miracles. But, Bill, we work with a lot of guys, and early in their recovery, Kelly, they'll tell us that they know they're on the way and that people don't trust them, and they get the sniff test when they come home, or your eyes are a little red, or why are you late? And we always have to share with people, hey, you know what? You've probably been lying to people for a long time. And when they question you early in your recovery, what they're really saying is, I love you, and I'm afraid that you're lying to me again because this seems too good to be true. But if you keep walking the walk, time has a way of proving it. And if you keep doing it, and my guess with your wife, Kelly, I've never met her, but my guess is you said 6 months, she wanted to believe right away, but then she got to see the fruit in your life, and she was on board with you. Is that how it worked out?
And that's what it was. Well, if she was, like I say, I had neglected her so much over the probably 20 years of our marriage that she was tired of it. I forgot what that book that she read, the not the disappearing wife, but the but she was done probably 10 years prior to that. She had detached herself from me.
Mm-hmm.
She loved me, but she was done. She was just waiting for the right time, the right moment to get out. You know, I honestly thought when I was just sitting in the garage drinking a beer with the boys, hey, I'm home. I'm home. But I wasn't home.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm sitting in the garage with all the boys getting cranked, getting pounded. As I said, going to my planet. As my wife's sitting in the house dying.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. Spiritually, physically, emotionally, I drained her.
How did you fill the void when you quit drinking? You went back to church, and didn't you kind of miss the guys hanging out in the garage? How did you fill that void?
That took some time. My one uncle, who is a Assemblies of God pastor and been a pastor for years, he kind of took it out of context because I actually went to him and I said, "Uncle Bill, when am I going to feel the joy of the Lord? Because I don't feel it right now. I don't feel any joy at all." And he turned around and he actually said to me, "Kelly, how long have you been out there selling your wild oats? It doesn't just happen overnight. It takes time. You know, the joy of the Lord will come. But, you know, I think when you sow your oats for so long, it takes time for that joy to come to you from the Lord. Maybe I'm wrong by saying that. I don't know, but it took some time. I was probably the most miserable Christian there was, you know, because I didn't fill that void. I missed the drinking.
Well, you know, let's face it. We don't get to be alcoholics and addicts if there isn't a positive part of our addiction that we like. It changes how we feel. We usually have some good times, and then it turns on us. If I'm 8 miles in the woods, I got to come 8 miles out of the woods. And you made a commitment. You made a covenant with God that you made a vow. You're going to do this. And Bill and I work with a lot of guys early in recovery, and I know for me that first year, that first couple years were really tough. But I can do anything for one day. And Jesus said, don't worry about tomorrow, for each day has enough trouble of its own. And that's where we get the one day at a time. And my guess is during your first couple of years, there were a lot of, I'm going to do this, but maybe I got to go to bed at 7 o'clock, you know?
Yeah. Well, I honestly, George, I detached myself from a lot of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, family. That to this day, I love them. I love them to death. But I don't want to be around the alcohol anymore. You know, I can't be personally. I can't be around it because Satan hits me hard. You know, I hear whispers. Come on, just have one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't do AA. You know, you didn't. You don't have a problem.
Mm.
Well, I did have a problem.
Yeah,
I did a case of beer wouldn't even satisfy me.
Wow,
you know, and that's the thing. It's a slow death.
Kelly, we're going to take a very short break. If you just hang on to that thought, we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill Arnold and George Fraser. Alex on the board. We're having a good night. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to My Faith Radio. George, I don't sing along with elevator music like you do. I don't do that like you do. Are we back? Oh, we're back. Welcome back to Real Recovery.
Mics are on.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Fraser. We're talking tonight with Kelly. Kelly lives in Baltimore. And what a story. George, you had a question for Kelly.
Kelly, was it hard for you to go back into church? I know for me, when I first got sober, going to recovery meetings and stuff, there was like a force field on the door, and I felt like a big hypocrite and guilty and shameful. Was it hard for you to walk back into church?
Boy, I really have never been asked that question. No, honestly, George, no, it wasn't, because I knew that the church was the right place to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, My soul always cried out to the Lord. I just chose to ignore it. I numbed that. You know, I was telling Bill, I grew up going to church 4 times a week. You know, I had the biblical background. I grew up going to church. I always knew I needed to be there, but I chose not to. You know, so going back to me, no, I had to do it. I needed it. You know, I had to go back. And I love going to church. I honestly say I feel bad. I miss church today, and I feel like I've really messed up by not going today, even though I was out of town. I enjoy going to church every Sunday morning.
Well, I think this counts for you.
Yeah, you're right. But... No, I don't like to miss. The pastor and I have become very good friends. And just to go back, he actually came to our house and tried to counsel us 6 years ago, because my wife had been going to church for a couple months. And I told him, you know, don't come here. Don't come here as a pastor trying to preach to me, because I'll probably shoot you down. And I actually scared the man. And he came back to me probably 6 months ago and said, Kelly, I honestly didn't care for you too much. You were cocky. You were arrogant. And I said, Joe, well, I was. I just didn't want to hear it from anybody. Now, like I told you, we have become very good friends through all this, and I love serving people in the church. I have filled that void, and I'm happy that I did.
I like the joy of the recovery, Bill, in that it sounds to me, just talking to Kelly tonight, that it would be fun. We were talking on the break about your garage. I figured there was like a Baltimore Colts pennant up there. They probably took it down when they moved. But, you know, the memorabilia, and you had all your buddies over, and you're a good guy, but you're using all your God-given talents for yourself. Then you then you put a plug in the jug, and you go back to church, and they welcome you. And yet that need to be with people was counterfeited. You know, you're being with your buddies in the garage, and now you're doing God's work, and you don't like missing church, and you've realized that you're really doing what you want to do, and the arrogance and the cockiness is your talents for people is turned into service, and you're a deacon now. How'd that come about?
Yeah. Like I said, I've always been the extrovert. I don't know if you've ever done one of those Myers-Briggs what is that, personality assessment?
Yes.
I tip the scales as an extrovert. I love people. I love serving people. You know, my garage, I look around the room. I am one of those guys that would look around the room, even drunk, and I would pick out the person that wasn't talking, was just sitting there, and I would be the one that would go over and just get them to start talking, engage them. I have just learned how to convert that to doing the Lord's work, you know, in the church. I see a person or a young couple or a married couple in church that no one's really talking to. I'll go up to them. I have learned to use that gift that you're right, George, that God has given me, because honestly, I thought it was a curse at first. But I've learned to use that in a positive way to lead people to the Lord. That it, you know, it's not an easy path, but it is. It's a good path. It's an enjoyable path. You know, what other friend that would stick through you through thick and like the Lord? You know, he stuck beside me, and he's still sticking beside me. So I have to use my gifts to glorify him. You know, I don't beat it down my friends' throats. I hope that they see a change in me, you know, and I can honestly say even when I did first start serving the Lord, I thought that all my friends, all my cousins would follow my footsteps behind me. I thought that they would start serving the Lord, start going to church. Then I had to figure out that I can't lead them to the Lord. Only the Lord can save them. All I can do is live for him and let my light shine. Eventually, they're going to come around. But they're at a place that I used to be. They still like I call it self-medicate. They still like to self-medicate themselves. They don't think they have an issue with drinking 15, 16 beers. It's not an issue. So, I walk with the Lord.
A little bit of self-denial there, wouldn't you say?
Well,
not you, to your buddies.
Yeah, your buddies.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. When they're around me now, they try to justify their drinking around me. This is the first beer that I had today. Guys, I don't care. That's between you and the Lord. You know, do I know that they're alcoholics? Yeah. But it's not going to do me any good to preach to them.
Well, I think you do really carry the message when it's based on attraction rather than promotion. When they hit the wall, they're going to know where to go. Kind of like you did with your pastor. You know, it sounds like he came by and didn't go real well. You kind of blew him off 6 years before. But when you're ready, you know who to go to. You know who God's team is. And that's what you're doing for your friends. And they see the change in you. And you got to know they want that deep down. They're just not ready to let go. Well, bam, right upside the head, something happens, and they're there. And I like that kind of evangelism. Is I'm not asking you to do anything I'm not doing, and what Jesus has done for me is truly a miracle. And they got to see that.
Yeah, I think, George, is a lot of – I'm just speaking for my buddies. A couple of them grew up in church. They justify their drinking. And they minimize it. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. I don't, this is just my opinion, and I shared this with Bill. Alcohol is a serpent. It's a snake. You can take that snake home. You can play with that snake. You can love on that snake. But sooner or later, that snake is going to bite you. So my philosophy is, why play with the snake? Why have that one or two beers? It's just going to lead you down a path. And I said prior, Satan is very patient. He's very patient. He entices you with that. It's the same thing he did to me. He enticed me with that beer, that mixed drink. You got to be careful with it.
Yeah, and Kelly, we've talked too about playmates and playgrounds when you get around certain buddies that you used to drink with or certain places. I mean, is it tough pulling into your garage at night and going, I used to have some fun in here, or does
yeah,
it...
they all just like to tell me we missed the old Kelly.
Hmm.
That's what the a lot of the neighbors, we missed the old Kelly.
Yeah, but your wife and kids don't.
No, my wife definitely doesn't.
No,
she lets me know. I honestly have a fantastic wife. She puts up with a lot. She just always tells me she loves the new Kelly. I catch her, actually, she's looking over at me, and I know what she's thinking. And honestly, that makes me feel good. You know, I'm a new creation.
Kelly, that's got to offer so much hope for couples out there who tonight are in that situation where there's estrangement in the family, in the household, and they're just not communicating because there's so much tension.
Yeah. Honestly, it's the toughest thing, and I still battle with it to this day, for a man to open up to his spouse. It is the toughest thing to do, because we were always taught it's the macho thing to do. I'm the man of the house, and like I say, I still struggle with this today, to open up to my wife, to let her into my head.
Well, that is so much honesty, Kelly.
Yep.
Thank you for saying that. That is an important thing to share with our listeners. We're going to just give you a chance to think about that a little bit more. We want to explore that a little bit more. And when we come back, we have one more segment with Kelly. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex W. on the big board. Be back in a minute. Thank you for listening to Real Recovery tonight. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex W. on the board. We are talking to Kelly tonight. Kelly lives in Baltimore, and the Twins had a nice victory over the Baltimore.
Couple of them, I think.
Couple,
Bill.
Yeah, but let's not bring that up again, George.
You guys just don't let that go, do you?
Well, we don't win very often. It's a big deal for us.
Kelly, you were talking throughout the show about being home but not being home, and I found that to be really a very interesting concept. Because it's you were sort of justifying being home, but you just were not connecting. And I think you're doing this interview from your garage tonight. Is that true?
I'm sitting in it now. Actually, I'm looking around.
So I find it. George made that connection. George said, "I think he's actually in his garage tonight."
Well, how cool is that?
I think it's
about
really cool.
Transformation. And I think sometimes Jesus throws us some little coincidences with God. There are no coincidences. It's God's way of being anonymous, I think. I know that's an old cliche. But here's a guy that partied every night in the garage with his buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's talking on a Christian recovery radio show about what Jesus has done in his life, and he's sitting in the garage. God kind of saying, hey, I always had you, and I still got you, so keep walking with me. Neat deal.
No, I'm looking around my garage right now, and it is filled with golf grab bags for our golf tournament this Saturday for our church. We actually do a CICM golf tournament for Central India Christian Mission, and I have 104 bags sitting in here filled with goodies. Yeah, it has definitely changed. My refrigerator full of beer is gone. The refrigerator is gone. And I have church stuff in here. Yeah. That's just, yeah, it's quite kind of funny you guys brought that up. Yeah, it's, yeah. Wow, I didn't even think about that. And, yeah, how things have changed. Yeah,
that is
for
cool.
For the better.
I mean, you're in your garage honoring Jesus Christ tonight in your life, and there was a couple of decades where that garage was pulling you away from him.
Well, it would, on a Sunday night, it would definitely be filled with some chairs, and yeah, the beers would be flowing. We'd probably have the chimney going because it's a little cool outside. That would be sitting out in front. We had definitely had that man cave going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Things have definitely changed.
So, Kelly, how has the Word of God really taken over in your life? I mean, do you find yourself, are you a memorizer, or do you just like to be in studies, or tell me about your habits, your routines?
Well, I can honestly tell you, being an extrovert, I have that attention deficit disorder. If it doesn't excite me, and I'm probably sharing, I struggle with reading the Bible. It has always been an issue. I've read one book in my lifetime, and that was just because I had to do a high school. I guess it was a term paper.
Mm-hmm.
Reading is one of my, I lose attention with it.
Do you do good with listening to sermons and that kind of thing?
I listen to sermons. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, there is one senior deacon in our church. He was on Facebook, and he puts the verses on there every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Just three or four of them. Every morning I read those verses, and I put like next to the one that I like, and I shared that with him, and a big old smile came on his face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he is feeding me. He is feeding me a verse or two every day, and that's how I get my scriptures in me. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I don't read my Bible as much as I should. In fact, it sits on my side of my bed. But I get it from Facebook. That's crazy, but that's what I do. And I have the New Testament on tape,
mm-hmm.
in my CD in my car. And I listen to that. And honestly, I changed a lot of my music that I listen to. I enjoy the Christian music now. Yeah, I listen to that every day, and I listen to sports radio every day. I just try to fill my mind with more clean stuff.
I think you'll, Kelly, I think you'll discover tomorrow on sports radio that the Minnesota Twins beat the Orioles.
Oh, here we go again.
I was hoping not to bring that up again.
I won't bring up the Baltimore Ravens. You know, they were Super Bowl champions last year. When's the last time that anybody up that way even came up? I'm just saying, but never mind.
Yeah, well.
Are we losing the connection here, Bill?
No, we're not.
Hey, Kelly, I was laughing when you said about attention deficit disorder. I think a lot of us in recovery, I have it. And so I really am glad you shared about the different ways we can get the gospel message. I live far out of the city, and I can hear a lot of sermons. Bill gives me tapes all the time of a guy out of New York that I just love named Tim Keller. And it's changed dead time of listening to, you know, music that I forget about the minute I get to where I'm going to really changing my life. And I'm glad you brought that up, that there are moments and times that God can really minister to us. Facebook, there's a lot of things, you know. So thanks for bringing that up, because it's hard for me to sit down, too.
Yeah, I can't sit still. I never could. It's just, and I'm not going to build my pastor up, but honestly, he's one of the best teacher preachers that I've ever listened to. When he preaches, I actually listen to it, and I retain it. You know, a lot of times when you hear sermons, as soon as you walk out the door, you couldn't tell what that preacher even talked about. I can honestly go back through just about every one of Joe's messages, and I remember them. He brings it to me in such a way that I actually pay attention.
Well, I think the Holy Spirit is equipping you, and God is giving you this spirit of being an extrovert, and you are now using that gift to share your hope with others. I love the concept of approaching people who look like nobody's talking to them. I think that's one of the great pieces of an effective ministry is people who loiter, and then they see people who aren't appearing to be engaged at all, and then you go up and introduce yourself and start talking, and that's how transformation starts to take place. People get engaged in conversation. They feel loved. They feel accepted. They feel affirmed. They go, I think this guy actually likes me. It kind of feels good to people.
Yeah, well, and honestly, that's one thing that we do, and I'm not trying to build our church up. We have a parking ministry, and I've been on that parking ministry for 6 years straight. That is the first place that a person meets you is in the parking lot. Apparently, from what I hear, they know more about that church the first 2 minutes when they're greeted out in that parking lot, whether they're going to even come back or not. And I honestly find that, I think that's true. People are hurting. In today's world, people are hurting. People are hurting financially. People are hurting spiritually, emotionally. They're just crying out. And in their silence when they come to church. And honestly, I use that gift that God gave me to discern. These people are hurt. Talk to them. Just show them some God's love. You don't have to be super spiritual. You don't have to know how to pray perfectly, which I'm terrible at. But I think people like authentic people that aren't fake, that aren't phony, that just come to them and love on them. And just give them some words of encouragement. You know, hey, how you doing? Haven't seen you here before. Are you from around here? Is this your first time here? You know, people are struggling. It's tough. Baltimore's probably one of the least to be hit with unemployment and stuff of that nature, but you can see it. People are struggling. They need the love of the Lord. They need to see some joy. Because right now, it's not there. So,
good message of hope. Good message of hope. I want to take you back a little bit. One of the things you said, kind of a plug for the radio station that we're at. When I first got sober, Kelly, I listened to a Christian radio station because I really didn't know that much about Christianity. And there was a guy named Chuck Swindoll. And I would listen to him every day. He came on at 9 o'clock, and I would listen to it every day. And for years, and it changed my life. And so I think you bring up, there's opportunities, you know, you might not get time every day to do a Bible study structured, but you can pick up a lot of good stuff. And Christian radio is a good way to do that too.
It definitely is. I know Chuck, he's got that sports announcer's voice.
He's got
a beautiful voice. And him and Tony Evans, there is a lot of good ones out there. And the Irish guy, I forget his, or the English, I forget his name. I thoroughly enjoy listening to him. There are Christian radio stations out there. Fill your mind with the right stuff. That's what I try to do. You know, don't get me wrong. I still enjoy some rock music, and I'm not going to say it's good or bad. I don't know. But fill your mind with, I don't want to say godly stuff, but yeah, it's godly stuff.
Exactly. Fill it with godly
stuff. You know,
trash
in, trash out. That's just the way I was brought up. You know, just he wants you to be more like him, to grow to be more like him, to be more Christ-like. You know, I think the longer that you serve him, the more you want to emulate him, the more you want to be like him. That's the point that I'm at. I'm starting to mature. I'm starting to learn how to pray out loud, which I had a big phobia over. It's crazy. As much as I could work a room and talk to people, I could not pray out loud. I didn't think I had the gift. There is no gift. It's just speaking what's on your heart.
Amen.
Whether you come out tongue-tied or not tongue-tied, it doesn't matter. The Lord knows your heart. You know, just speak what's in there.
Well, you
know, the only thing I can say, if guys are struggling out there, don't try to do it on your own. Straighten yourself up, then go in to serve, be in the church. Go now. You know, let the Lord take care of it. Because I can tell you right now, you ain't going to do it on your own. You're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Satan's too powerful for that. Unless you have God in your corner, you're not going to get out of this addiction. You can't do it on your own. Don't think you can clean yourself up and straighten your family out and do it without the Lord. Go to Him now.
Amen. Kelly, you are a man of conviction, and we certainly appreciate you being a guest on tonight's show.
It's been my pleasure.
We are all out of time. And,
thanks, Kelly.
It's been wonderful hearing his testimony and
absolutely
hearing the strength.
I hope I did okay. I just, like I say, I get a little tongue-tied. But
you did great. Thanks for listening to Real Recovery tonight. We're glad you joined us. Have a great week. Good night, and God bless.